I'm Carol Hills, and this is The World. It's almost like President Trump wanted to distract the nation's attention from his own big announcement today. Before getting on a plane to Florida, where he unveiled a new Cuba policy, Trump once again tweeted his frustration at the Russia investigation. The president called it a witch hunt and lashed out at those involved. He also threw Washington for a loop by appearing to confirm that he himself is under investigation. Then Trump's personal lawyer denied that's what he meant. So yeah, that pointed the spotlight away from Miami for much of the day. And of course, we'll keep following that Russia investigation wherever it points. But we begin the show today with Trump's Cuba announcement in Miami, and it was a big one.
Effective immediately, I am canceling the last administration's completely one-sided deal with Cuba.
Speaking before a largely Cuban-American audience in Miami's Little Havana neighborhood, the president also had a tough message for Cuba's communist leaders.
To the Cuban government, I say, put an end to the abuse of dissidents. Release the political prisoners. Stop jailing innocent people. Open yourselves to political and economic freedoms.
That was President Trump in Miami this afternoon. The World's Maria Muriel reports on U.S.-Cuba relations. Maria, what has President Trump changed?
Hey, Carol. The biggest thing that President Trump changed today is definitely that American businesses are no longer allowed to do any business transactions with something called GAESA, which is the Cuban military's sort of enterprise administrative branch, if you will. They control it's the part of the Cuban government that controls their business ventures. And if you go to Cuba, likely most businesses that you patronize are going to be government run. So that's a pretty big change in the policy today. Another thing is Americans can still travel to Cuba, especially Cuban Americans, but there's still no tourism allowed. You can't just go on a Cuban vacation to Havana or Varadero. And also they're making changes to the people-to-people exchanges that the Obama administration had made a provision for. Now, if you want to go to Cuba, you have to go through a group, a sort of sanctioned group tour for learning about the culture.
What's the goal of this policy change?
President Trump said the goal is to pressure the communist regime in Cuba to act on behalf of human rights. There are still political prisoners in Cuba. The Castro regime still controls the islands. It does not allow the private sector to flourish. And this is something that President Trump says will probably be aided by this change in policy.
Are these changes really that significant, or are they enough for Trump to say he did something to repeal the Obama changes?
Well, you know, on paper, it really doesn't seem that way. You know, Obama established 12 categories under which Americans could travel to Cuba. Those are still going to be in place, and the embassies are still going to be open. So really, these tweaks don't seem that significant. But it will be harder for Americans to travel to Cuba. And avoiding business transactions with a government entity once you're on the island is really difficult.
So who's going to be pleased with this announcement today?
Trump had a lot of support from the Cuban exile community in Miami during the election. About 54% of Cubans in Miami voted for Trump. So this is probably going to be pleasing for those people. During the speech today, he had a lot of people there, you know, chanting Cuba sí, Castro no, which is a slogan that Cuban Americans use when talking about the Castro regime. And so this policy was really crafted for them, it seems. And it was also crafted by Trump with the help of Marco Rubio, Senator Marco Rubio, and Mario Diaz-Balart, who are Cuban-American politicians. They are conservative on the issue of Cuban relations with the U.S., and they're part of a faction of Cuban-Americans that are the hardliners. They really believe that we should not engage with the Cuban government unless they make human rights concessions. And they were critical. This same faction was always critical of Obama's push to open up relations with Cuba. So those are the kinds of people that are going to be pleased with this Trump rollback, even if it doesn't seem that significant. You know, we'll probably hear from people who are saying this is a step in the right direction.
And of course, the U.S. embargo against Cuba is still in effect, as it has been since, I think, 1961.
Right. We still don't openly trade with Cuba.
The World's Maria Muriel, great to speak with you.
Thanks, Carol.
I think this is an important first step to try to roll back some of the failed policies that the Obama administration put out towards Cuba.
Ariana Mendez is a young Cuban-American living in Miami. And as you just heard there, she supports Trump's plan to roll back on the opening to Cuba.
I think opening relationships with the United States or having talks with the United States, it's a reward for good behavior, for a good human rights record, for a good record on economics. And I think that the Castro regime has done nothing to merit that outreach. And I think that President Trump has the right idea of trying to restrict travel to Cuba and try to restrict the commercial relationship with Cuba that is only benefiting the Castro government.
Now, Trump's policy doesn't entirely reverse Obama's rapprochement with Havana. In your opinion, do Trump's policies go far enough?
I think that it's impossible to say that Trump can single-handedly, with one announcement, undo everything that Obama did. I think this is a good first step. And I think it's important to point out that this is changing the tone. When the Obama administration came out with the changes in policy, this was supposed to extend an olive branch to the Cuban people. This is saying that olive branch is still there, but now you have to do the specific things to deserve that olive branch. And if not, we'll take it away because you don't deserve to have it in the first place. If you're not willing to protect your own people and actually implement policies that benefit not just the higher up in the top ranking members of the Communist Party, but the poor Cuban on the street. And I think that's a very important change of pace.
Now, you said that Trump's change in policy is a good first step. What do you want Trump's next step to be?
I actually want a very hardline stance. I want clear benchmarks, and if those benchmarks are not met, there will be consequences, either in the form of business, in the form of aid. I think that we're getting to a point in time in history that a Castro regime needs to realize that it's a relic of a failed philosophy, and it cannot continue to punish the Cuban people in that way.
Ariana, can you tell us a little bit about your family history? What's their opinion of the Castro regime?
Well, personally, I was born in the United States. My parents came here in the late 80s. My mother is in her 50s. My father is in his late 60s. And they went through a very interesting situation through Cuba. Their family businesses were nationalized. Their homes were nationalized. And they were blacklisted and were not able to leave the country for many years because of their prior affiliation to Batista. So they eventually made their way to sunny California. And that's where I was born, and we later moved down here to Miami.
Ariana, do you have any kids of your own?
No, I don't. Not yet.
If you eventually do have kids, what kind of relationship would you like your children to have with Cuba?
You know, it's a very strange feeling, but unlike Irish Americans, Mexican Americans, I don't really have a place that I can trace my ancestry to. My parents came from Cuba, but the stories they share with me of the Cuba that they lived in, that Cuba is lost forever. So the relationship I want my children to have with Cuba is one of remembering the Cuba that my parents talked to me about, enjoying the food, enjoying the culture of my parents' generation. But essentially, I have no place to tell them, please go back there and look at your grandparents' hometown. Please go back and look at the beauties of the city. There's nothing left of what my parents left behind.
Ariana Mendez in Miami. She supports President Trump's Cuba policy. Thanks, Ariana.
Thank you.
That's one view of President Trump's announcement today, rolling back on the opening to Cuba that his predecessor had set in motion. Not surprisingly, there are also those who don't agree with Trump's move.
It's a mistake.
Arturo Lopez Levy worked for the Cuban government in the 1990s. He resigned and left the island. He now teaches at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. I asked Arturo what he's most opposed to in Trump's policy.
The most important objection would be to the issue of travel, because it might reduce the number of Americans traveling to Cuba, and it will give the wrong example. The United States don't promote human rights in Cuba by limiting the right of Americans to travel to the island.
Who do you think Trump's policies will hurt the most?
Well, it will hurt the most the possibilities of political opening and economic reform in Cuba. And the people that are receiving these benefits that are tangible and intangible are the Cuban population at large.
But it's not as if Cuba has changed a whole lot since Obama's reaching out to them a couple of years ago. I mean, human rights situation, political freedom, none of that has really improved a whole lot.
Well, I will disagree with that. I think that one important thing is to keep a policy long enough to harvest good results. In the case of Cuba, for more than 56 years, there was a policy of hostility and isolation. And every time this hostility and isolation increases, human rights situation deteriorate. In the case of the last 2 years of Obama's policy, there was a significant reduction in the number of long-term detention. The right to travel of the Cuban was expanded, and also the right to own private property had a major expansion. So I agree that America should express solidarity with victims of repressions, but even in this, in the case of that, the situation improved.
Now, as part of his plan, Trump wants to prohibit financial transactions with companies that are controlled by the military. Isn't this a good first step to ensure that it's the Cuban people, not the military, who reap the benefits of American engagement?
No, because whoever underestimates the importance of nationalism in Cuban culture has proven to be always wrong. Targeting the military will only rally the people around the flag and make more difficult important transition in civil-military relations that are approaching in Cuban history with the retirement of Raúl Castro and the rise to the presidency of the first civilian.
Now, there are some people out there who say that Trump's changes are really cosmetic, that they're just kind of a sop to a conservative constituency in southern Florida, and it's more rhetoric than real action. How do you respond to that?
I think that language matters, and in this case, it will make the environment and the air between the two countries nasty, and that's not the way to proceed.
What do you suggest the next step in Cuba policy be?
I think that it should be end the embargo. It's true that it will strengthen temporarily the Cuban communist government, but it will unleash dynamics of reforms that might in the future lead to a more democratic and friendly toward the United States Cuba.
Arturo Lopez Levy teaches at the University of Texas. He's co-author of Raúl Castro and the New Cuba. Thanks, Arturo.
It's a great pleasure.
With God's help, a free Cuba is what we will soon achieve. That's a line from President Trump's speech today in Miami, where he announced that he's hitting pause on President Obama's celebrated opening to Cuba. Trump's new policy will focus on restricting travel to Cuba by Americans, but more importantly, perhaps, it aims to prevent U.S. businesses from dealing with companies owned by the Cuban armed forces.
We will very strongly restrict American dollars flowing to the military, security, and intelligence services that are the core of the Castro regime. They will be restricted.
Paul Hare is a former British ambassador to Cuba. He now teaches international relations at Boston University. Paul, Donald Trump wants to stop money going to the Cuban military. It seems like a reasonable thing to do on the face of it, but just how widespread is the Cuban military's economic reach on the island?
Well, in terms of their presence in the hard currency earning sector, so things like tourism, the ports, logistics, and communications, it's the monopoly. They've been very careful in allowing the military to play prominent roles in key strategic sectors so that they can control the inflow of hard currency. And obviously, the government then has access to it. So probably about 70%, most people think that there are no accounts published, so it's very difficult to know. 70% of all the hard currency that Cuba earns externally will be generated by military-run companies.
I hear this acronym GAESA, G-A-E-S-A. What does GAESA literally mean?
It means, it's a very boring name, actually. It means basically an administrative group for enterprises. And it's been built up over really the last 25 years or so to, some people compare it to an octopus. It's got tentacles everywhere. And it gradually swallows up more areas of activity. If you want to get a SIM card for your phone, I mean, the company that issues those, there's only one, you know, will be military run.
What does the Cuban military do with the money that it gets from all these businesses it runs? Do they buy tanks, or is it something more subtle than that?
it's really the hard currency coffers of the government. So anything they need to do to provide for health services, for education, security services, yes, but most of that is not, you know, tanks any longer or MiG fighters. Most people think their military is pretty out of date and poorly maintained. But in terms of state security, the policing, you know, monitoring of people's activities, all that sort of stuff, this is where they get their money from.
Who controls the money? I mean, is there much corruption that we know of?
There is corruption, and the military, I'm sure, are guilty of some of that themselves, but they've been pretty strong on rooting out corruption. They've been high-level officials. There was one recently who was in charge of the aviation sector who was fired for corruption. Others in charge of food importing have been also fired for corruption. Raul, I mean, the Castros live very well, so they're not too concerned about obviously taking bribes or things like that, because they live very well without that. But corruption will increasingly be a problem. These companies have enormous sway over dealing with big foreign investor companies. They're handling big amounts of money, big loans.
So essentially, the Cuban military is the recipient of the hard currency that comes in. I mean, the large amounts of hard currency that come into the country, and then can decide how it's going to use that hard currency.
Well, the Cuban military is essentially the government. Raul Castro, you know, was the Minister of Defense for 50 years until he became president. And the key members of the Communist Party, which rule the country, the Politburo, the Council of State, many of them have dual status in the Communist Party and the military. So they are the military. There's no separation. It's a seamless organization, a seamless link between the Cuban government and the military.
Paul Hare is a lecturer at Boston University. He's also a former British ambassador to Cuba. Thanks so much.
Thank you.